Claire Hannah from the Remain campaign, SDLP MLA, is in the studio with us this morning. Claire, good morning to you.
Good morning, Stephen.
Well, we're getting really close now, aren't we? 2 days to go and people throughout the UK will be voting as to what way they want their country to remain in the EU or indeed leave it. The fundamental question is whether we want to stand on our own 2 feet, is it not? Govern ourselves.
Well,
trust
we do.
Our own politicians here rather than faceless bureaucrats.
Well, I think that's a lot of misinformation. We do govern ourselves. The United Kingdom remains sovereign. What we do is we pool sovereignty, and in the same way as we do with the World Trade Organization, NATO, the UN and other organisations that the Leave camp aren't suggesting we leave, things that we can't deal with on our own, things that don't stop at the borders, we pool our sovereignty. See this business about 75% of our laws come from the EU? That's actually not true. I mean, a lot of those laws are about stuff like growing tobacco and processing olives and things that have no relevance to us. But
you
the fact
know that
is,
Europe has a say in how this country.
Of course,
is
it does.
Run.
Yes, it does have a say in a lot of things that are in our interests to share, and things like the single market, because it's in our interest to have the same sort of components going into things. It's in our interest
things
to have
like
the
court
same
decisions, Claire.
Well, a lot of
judges in this country being overruled by a judge elsewhere.
But very often they're not. And the fact is that the UK legal system and the European legal system have effectively developed in parallel over the last four decades. It's difficult to unpick. And in fact, if we did leave Europe, there would be an insane amount of work to unpick them. It's difficult to see what is EU and what isn't. But in fact, a lot of the decisions that people like Daniel, and Daniel is very good, by the way, he's very convincing. And you would almost think that Nigel Farage is a figment of our imagination so far. Or did he go to distance himself from the rhetoric of that side of his campaign? But
Daniel's campaign, is it? But UKIP is separate from the Leave campaign. Nigel Farage is not the front man for the Leave campaign.
Well, Nigel Farage is about to hit the jackpot. Everything that he has been agitating for years, if he wins this, and the fact is, you're right, everybody in the Leave campaign, there are some very good and honourable people and people with good politics, and everybody who is voting Leave isn't a racist, but you can be sure that everybody who buys into the UKIP view of the world will be voting to leave.
But I repeat my point that why would some minister in Germany, for example, have any why should they have any interest in what we do here?
Because we have
any
interest.
Say. Why should they dictate the people here?
Well, they're not dictating.
What happens here?
Well, they're not
dictating.
They're
helping to dictate.
It's about global interdependence in the same way as we have say in their lives as well. It's the things that affect us all jointly. But I mean, the fact is, they talk about the democratic deficit, and in fact, the Council of Ministers, they are responding to democratic pressures in their own countries as well, and that is democratic. But if you say, I mean, I don't see this campaign making any play of the fact that 800 lords in the United Kingdom aren't elected. Those people go get that job because they're pally with the Prime Minister or because their dad had the job before them. You know, that's a democratic deficit as well that I don't see the same people seeking to overturn.
Isn't there a contradiction in what you stand for? So here you are supporting people from around Europe. You're saying that the big picture decision making can work. And yet you're an MLA in a local assembly, devolution, you believe in it. Therefore, you believe actually that if you take power out of the centre and bring it locally, it's better for local people. And here you are now telling local people in Northern Ireland, push some of that decision making to these people we can't even say their names in Europe.
Well, we can't say their names.
Well,
and I think without,
we don't know who they are.
Without nerding
Do you think
it
ordinary
up?
People on the ground know who some European German MEP is?
Well, the fact is, a lot of people probably can't name their own MEPs. Say here, they probably have a slightly higher
Precisely.
Profile.
Precisely. What does
than
that
across
tell you?
Well,
what does that tell
says
you?
That the MEPs that we're not engaging people properly on these issues.
And what does that tell you?
That's not Europe's fault.
MEPs are irrelevant if
well,
you take your
logic. It isn't, and in fact, that's part of the problem. Perhaps, I mean, the United Kingdom collectively gets, 75%, gets about 10%. Perhaps if we didn't send people to go and howl at the moon, perhaps if we send people who are prepared to go over there, make alliances, do the reforms that are necessary, perhaps, I mean, you know, people, the DUP, for example, have been shouting about reforms. I'd love to hear what they've done in 40 years to advance reform, other than just going over and basically bleeding the calf before they slaughter it.
How can you at the same time believe in devolution and believe in that distant control.
It's called the principle of subsidiarity. It's basically that decisions are made.
The principle
closest,
of subsidiarity. I don't even know what that means.
Okay, it's basically, I know. It's about the principle that decisions are made closest to the level that they affect. And it's interesting that Dan Hannan sells himself as the champion of localism. How does that fit if Scotland, Northern Ireland, and probably Wales vote to remain and England pulls us all out? How does that fit with the definition of localism that he has built his career on? But yes, the fact is, some decisions about how we spend our education budget here, how we spend our health budget, you know, where we put speed bumps, which street lamp we put, of course those decisions are supposed to be made, are best made by the Northern Ireland Assembly or indeed by councils. But on issues around climate change, on issues around standardising the guarantees that we get as consumers, on issues around car seats, you know, if that's expertise that is consistent across Europe, it's appropriate that some of those decisions are made across Europe, and we have a say in that as well. So I don't buy.
Well, we have a say, but we don't have control.
We do have control.
We do not have control.
What do we not have control of?
We do not have control in terms of those decisions which are made in Europe. We do not have control.
But
you
we
know
do.
We don't have control.
We do, actually. About 90% of resolutions are made by consensus in Europe. There are very few.
Consensus?
Yes, by consensus.
So we need other people to agree.
What is it? What is wrong
if we're
with
not,
that?
If we're not in Europe,
do you have to go in and wreck the place and decide, you know, even if something's in our best interest, because the French and the Germans agree with it, it must be a bad thing. That's ridiculous.
No, but I'm suggesting to you that we don't. Control means you decide for yourself.
Right.
We decide for ourselves.
But by the same token, will we withdraw from the United Nations? Will we withdraw from the World Trade Organization? Will we withdraw from a lot of other things where things that we can't decide on our own? You know, we talked about, complaints there about having to, as you say, bring your gas bill in when you open a bank account. I think that's sensible because money launderers don't see the borders. Human traffickers don't see the borders. You know, there are things that we can't fix all on our own, and all we're doing is sharing. Tell me one time when working with other people wasn't a good thing, you know. Tell me when global cooperation, and in fact, we need to go back to where Europe came from. 1,000 years of war in Europe that states were always at war with one another, and after the Second World
War... You're going to scare us with war
no,
now?
No, I'm not going to scare. I'm just going to say that thankfully 70-odd years ago, people had a better vision than that. That it wasn't that we couldn't just be nation states button off each other and working against each other. And the founding treaty of Europe, which, by the way, the Good Friday Agreement borrows very heavily from, was about people working together in their common interests, and it breaks down the barriers between people. And it has worked on European nation states. As I say, people have their differences and things. Relationships are hard, Stephen. We know they are, but it works for all of us.
The last time I looked, Claire, the SDLP were a nationalist party is about control of their own country, isn't it?
But it's not about control of their own country
yourself?
For the sake of it. For us, it's,
no, but that's what a nationalist party is, isn't it? Controlling yourself.
It's about the fact that an island this size makes more sense to be run as one economic unit. We have always been an internationalist party, and speaking for the SDLP specifically. Right back in the early 70s when the party was formed, John Hume and other people like that knew that you couldn't just be a nationalist party. They knew that Europe was part of the wider solution. You know, you have to plug yourself in, and we're a social democratic party as well, so there's a wider philosophy. It's not just about making decisions for Ireland just because we're Irish and we all have that in common. It's about the decisions being appropriate and the fact that one unit makes more sense.
You're a party that has form. In terms of your judgment, you're a party that told us that we had to be part of the single currency or risk being left economically weakened on the fringes.
We did in the late 90s, and I think, as I said to you the other day, that was a very long time ago in global economic terms.
2002, you were supporting the euro.
That's when the euro was formed. We maintain that the costs of doing business on this island are made worse by the fact that there are two currencies and there are two infrastructures. And yes, as a nationalist party, it may not come as a surprise to you that I believe in unity and economic unity of
the
island.
Euro, do you?
No, we don't. I think it's fair to say that the UK did make the correct decision. Now, the Eurozone wasn't fabulously well set up. I think that's fair to say. And things like interest rates being kept low, which suited things like Germany trying to reunify East and West. It didn't, and it's fair to, I mean, in terms of how the Eurozone affected the Republic, part of the banks gorged themselves on the low interest. So a lot of that was down to domestic decisions and not European decisions. But I tell you one thing, you talk about, you know, the predictions of doom about the euro. The fact is that I suppose places like Greece are probably pulling it down, but many people said it would go to the wall many times in the last 7 or 8 years. It hasn't.
So the euro is a roaring success, is it?
Well, actually, all countries except, I believe, Greece are in growth. And despite, I mean, all currencies have their wobbles. I tell you one thing, though.
So you would bring us into the euro, would you?
No, I've said nothing of the sort. I said UK had its own tests and those weren't met and has remained outside. But I tell you one thing,
Right to remain outside?
Yes, I think it was right to remain outside.
John Hume in 2003 was wrong. We always believed that the euro would help to make all of the people of Europe more prosperous by increasing trade between our various peoples.
But you see, we don't blindly say we have made a decision, so we're going to stick to it. Well, actually, we'll come back to Greece. But you talk about, come back to me in a year, by the way, if we come out of Europe, come back to me in a year and tell me what a powerhouse sterling is, because Goldman Sachs have already, they've said that 20% will come off sterling almost immediately. And Dan says that's just normal. You know, heebie-jeebies about an election. It's not. There's a thing called the volatility index, and it's going haywire at the moment because there's levels of just unpredictableness that haven't been seen since 2008. So you wanted to talk about Greece, right, but something obviously has occurred to you.
Well, just in the last, because you're talking fast, mm-hmm. you're good yourself, just like Daniel Hannan, you claim. There's just a couple of things you've said there that are ringing. The little bell rings in my brain. It's very small brain cells that I have. You talked about that people might know some of the European commissioners, right? People might know who they are. Can you name any of them?
Yeah.
Who?
Well,
who below Juncker?
Well,
that ordinary people here would know.
But what is it about? Can ordinary people name a lot of them? Is it really about that?
Well,
is it about
who
knowing
are
the
they?
Names?
Name a couple.
But I'm not going to start.
No, just one.
I'm not going to start. Mine has gone completely blank now. But the fact is,
does
it matter?
Can.
You talk about the legal system. Does it matter? Jim Nicholson is one. He's an MEP, not a commissioner. Sorry, we were talking about people not being able to name their MEPs. You talk about the likes of the legal system.
Commissioners,
here.
These European commissioners.
Yeah, you talk about the likes
of the
legal
any of
system.
Them?
Yes, I do. I do.
Who?
I've gone completely blank though, and somebody texted me a name that's wrong.
All right.
But the fact is,
somebody's
you talk
trying
about
to help you and they're
the
legal, wrong info.
The legal system. People don't know who's in charge of that. Is that what it's about? Is it about knowing the names? If people don't know the name of the health minister, does that mean they can't go in and
well,
be
what about
the health
okay?
System?
Well, let me help you further then. What about the British commissioner? Who's that?
The Agriculture Commission is probably the one that is most here, and that's Phil Hogan. I don't remember. I'll hold my hands up.
Well, hold on a minute. That's not me trying to be clever, right? I guess the point I'm trying to make to you is how relevant is Europe? How relevant is it if one of the campaigners here, you, and to be honest with you, probably very few other people know who any of these people are.
If there was a
Brexit, if there was a Leave campaign, then we might be able to say, well, do you know what? You know, we know the name of the Prime Minister, we know the name of the Chancellor, we know the name of the First Minister in Northern Ireland. Are these faceless bureaucrats who none of us know? You don't know who they are, Claire.
There's something in my mind that Britain doesn't have one at the moment. And like I say, I've named Phil Hogan, who's the Ireland one, for agriculture, which is one of the crucial things. But Stephen, I mean, in the same way as it's not a personality contest, and it doesn't mean that things aren't being done.
Well, I guess here's my point of the question.
But hang on, see about the relevance?
Yeah.
That's actually our fault. We need to make it relevant in the same way as, you know, we need to do civics education in schools do people know how legislation is made at Westminster at Stormont? I would get that they don't.
Isn't democracy, though, Claire, about people being able to look at a politician, part of democracy, look at a politician and say, okay, I like what you're doing, I know who you are, and therefore I'm voting for you or I'm kicking you out. Is that not part of what a democratic process is?
Well,
which we can't do with Europe.
Well, just for a start, you know, the UK government, who still has a massive amount of control, we don't elect them either. And nobody elects, people don't elect the various ministers here. People don't say, I'm going to vote for, you know, Michelle O'Neill to be health minister. They're appointed in the same way the commissioners are appointed by governments who are democratically elected and are responding to their own democratically, their own democratic pressures. So, you know, it's complete nonsense to say that there's no break. And like I say, there are absolutely the same democratic deficits, if you want to call them that, in the UK.
Do you support free movement of workers in the EU? In other words, anyone from any EU country can come and live and work in the UK. Unlimited immigration.
But it's not, you see, you say that because it's not unlimited. It's market sensitive. People go where there are opportunities. People aren't going in the same way as you and I aren't saying, let's move to Poland, unless there was a specific job there that we want to do. And if there aren't opportunities, yes, of course we could. But we don't just willy-nilly go over there because we want to. The fact is, where there are labour shortages, and we need to maybe look at the reasons why companies here are going and recruiting in places like Poland.
But do you support the principle?
Yes,
of
I do
free
support
movement.
That yes,
whether there's a job or not, anybody can decide to come to this country. We're coming.
Well, within Europe, they can. Yes,
that?
I do. I think that's a fundamental principle of the European Union. I'm not going to run away from it because I think there's a reason that it's there. And in general, it's a market-based system and it works. So, you know, I think there are a lot of very complex things have happened in our economy. Things like the subprime crisis, like the bank crisis. And people have boiled them all down and ignored them and said, a foreigner's coming to take your job. And it's not the case because we know, and all the statistics bear it out, those EU migrants who, by the way, as you pointed out in your earlier interview, are not even half of the UK's
correct.
Migration.
That's correct.
The very vast majority of them are in work. They're young, fit, strong people who are coming here to work. And they're coming here to work, which is why a lot of companies are recruiting for them specifically. And the facts show very clearly that they pay in considerably more than they take out in public services.
But do you accept that there is genuine opinion that local people, or indeed people who are born and bred in the UK, want priority of their services?
I totally understand that people, there are massive pressures on public services, and I genuinely understand. I'm not saying that somebody's racist for thinking I can't get this social house. I'm, you know, my child didn't get into that nursery school, but you have to look at the statistics. There are pressures on public services, but those aren't the fault of a care worker from Latvia. They're not the fault of, you know, a software engineer from Slovenia. They're the fault of poor public spending priorities here. And the fact is, if we took the money,
bringing in 300 odd thousand people a year through migration, okay, through immigration, you cannot say that that is not having an effect on our public services.
Well,
of course it will.
You can actually, because less than 2% of the population here are foreign born. And what I'm saying is the additional value that they add to our economy, if that money was spent on enhancing those public services, who, by the way, many of them work in, we would have no problem. So actually, if you said, right, no more foreigners and we take all the money that they put onto our economy, we would have less to spend. So public services would actually be worse.
So would you be happy, therefore, that the latest figures we have, 300 odd thousand immigration. I've already said to Daniel Hanlon this morning, and it's a point that you reminded me of this morning, that actually around half of that total net immigration was from non-EU countries. So let's make that clear. But whereas the Prime Minister had a target to bring net immigration down to the tens of thousands, a target that he failed to meet, a promise that he made to people that he failed to honour, would you have it in the hundreds of thousands? Are you not concerned about the levels of immigration?
Well, the fact is, like I say, here we have pretty much net migration. More people, in fact, that's our immigration problem. Young people still feeling they have to leave here to go and get work. One, I'm not David Cameron's keeper. I'm not speaking for him. I don't stand over
him.
Which
is why I'm asking you, would you be comfortable with immigration in the hundreds of thousands in the future?
Well, the fact is, it is in the hundreds of thousands. This is in North Korea. We can't plan our economy down to the nth degree. We can't plan it so that they're exactly
enough. We could control it if we left Europe.
Well, you know, but if you talk...
But it's important for me to understand this from you. you, or would you be comfortable with immigration and ongoing immigration in the hundreds of thousands?
Ongoing immigration is in the hundreds of thousands.
And would you be comfortable with that?
Yes, I'm comfortable at the level that it's at, because it is meeting job needs. And like I say, they are. If the work isn't there, people won't come. It's worth pointing out. Something like 40% of the immigration to the United Kingdom is from Asia, which is part of the fact that the legacy of colonies and the Commonwealth. But I mean, those people, for example, they subsidise all of our students by paying into the further and higher education. About 10% are Americans, about 10% are Australians, and the much vaunted point system that they have in Australia did, as you pointed out yourself, increase migration to that country.
It did. So if I'm hearing the logic behind your argument, right, you're saying, look, some of the people coming into this country, they're skilled. Mm-hmm. We need them.
Okay.
And that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So what is so special about EU countries and workers? Why shouldn't people from Africa, India, China have the same rights to come and work and live here?
Because we are in a European Union.
No, but the logic of what you're saying is we need these people. We need them. They bring in skills. So why not have a complete free-for-all? Why not let anybody from Africa, China, India come in?
I don't think that. We're not saying a complete free-for-all. We're saying
you are
it's
in terms of Europe.
I'm not. We're saying it's a reciprocal arrangement, and that's part of the whole package of deals and measures that relate to the single market and all the benefits
the
that we get
of
from
why
that.
You're
I don't. I don't. I don't. I don't take your point. The single
you
market
do.
And the European
sure.
project. Must I? You know, the single and it is about pooling and handing over some of our power and some of our
you're saying
say
we need
on
these
things.
People, Claire. You're saying we need their skills. You're saying that they bring advantage to this economy. So open up.
But we're not.
Open up Northern Ireland to the whole world.
The whole point of what we're saying. Point of what we're saying is that the European Union and the countries within it have specific things in common. Geography, just for a start, and that we are acting as a particular union of states. I'm not asking.
What does Germany have in common with Northern Ireland?
A huge. What does Germany not have in common with Northern Ireland? For a start, the majority of people are Christian. If we want to go down that way, we live in the same. We have a similar history. What does Germany not have in common with Northern Ireland? We're all human people.
It discriminates against other parts of the world to give special favours to this special EU club, does it not?
I'm not arguing for a complete, although I am an internationalist, for a complete global union.
Precisely.
But you're deliberately bunching in together a lot of things. I mean, for example, part of the immigrant or the movement of people to people here, and that Farage disgustingly portrayed on his poster, which, by the way, didn't show people coming anywhere near the United Kingdom, and deliberately blotted out the one white person. I mean, there are issues around asylum and refugees and things that aren't economic migration that the Leave campaign are lazily bundling up with migration that are separate moral issues that don't count. So some of the people coming into this country aren't coming here to get a better job. They're coming here because their home no longer exists or it isn't safe to be there. And it's irresponsible to bind them all up together.
Isn't the EU club, because the SDLP would position itself in the left of politics, wouldn't you?
Yes.
There are many on the left.
Social Democrats.
There are many on the left who see the EU as a rich man's club.
Well, there are many on the left.
It's clobbered the likes of Greece with austerity, hasn't it?
Well, I'll be
it's
honest.
Hardly made
with
itself
you.
Popular with the Republic of Ireland, has it?
Well, I'll be honest with
in
you.
Terms
I mean,
of
I think,
bailout
I think
terms.
In Greece and the Republic of Ireland, it is fair to say, and it's not about plucky little Greece or plucky little Ireland standing up against the big faceless bureaucrats. There were dreadful governance decisions in both of those countries, and I can say that. But by left and by right, there were really poor governance decisions. And if you talk about a democratic
they were hit
deficit,
hard with austerity, Claire.
They were hit in Greece's
really
case.
Really tough decisions made outside their country on austerity. Dictated, forced upon them.
But you talk about democratic deficits. The European taxpayer or the European countries who are funding that bailout, do they have to just take it on the chin time and time again? If in the in the case of Greece,
well,
to be fair,
one of the weaknesses of being part
they,
of Europe,
they
but you
didn't,
have to bail out other
well,
countries.
Well, actually, in some of Cameron's negotiations in February, he has negotiated a little bit of an opt out for the UK on that.
A little bit of an opt out.
Well, he has. It has to be negotiated because it, those things, in the same way
it's
as
not nailed down, is it?
No, a lot of things aren't nailed down, but there's nothing nailed down if we come out of Europe. There's absolutely no
That's
plan
right.
B.
Locally elected politicians nail it down for the people who elect them.
But we're not there are a lot of things that around trade deals that are nowhere near nailed down and will take years to nail down, and we're in a complete deadlock situation, because if we look at things like trade, everybody's waiting to see the deal we get from Europe. It'll take years, so we are genuinely stepping off a cliff in a lot of these.
That's the same question that Daniel Hannan. Name me, I don't know, three things that you okay. that we cannot do if we're outside of Europe.
It's not things that we cannot.
We can't.
If we leave
Europe, what can we not do?
It's not what that we cannot. But for example, we won't have the same. We can't fund our and we can't guarantee our farming income. 86%.
Can we guarantee it beyond 2020?
No, you can't guarantee. Can you guarantee it beyond next week if we leave the European Union? We can't. I mean, our market is entirely different.
I think you can. I'm not sure about this, but I think isn't there not a 2-year
window?
There
is a 2-year.
So we could guarantee it next week.
This has been
so that's
completely
wrong, isn't it?
No, that's not wrong. This 2-year window is basically the time in which you settle the terms of the divorce.
Yes.
It isn't about the 2-year window.
So the money
isn't about
stop
getting
next week,
into
in other
a new
words.
Relationship. The money, I think it would start at the end of the financial year, we would be negotiating the divorce. So we can't guarantee. But the fact is, I mean, Europe recognises the type of agri-foods economy that we have. Exports are, agri-food exports are a third of our exports here. They're 3% in GB. People like, in fact, Daniel Hannan said that asking Boris Johnson about CAP was irrelevant. Tell that to the farmers here, that it's irrelevant. You know, they're negotiating for an entirely different set of people. You also asked me about criticism from people on the left, and I understand things like TTIP. I have concerns about TTIP as well. But by the way, the worst things about the UK healthcare aspect has been put in an arbitration court. The papers are now transparent, and they're transparent, and there's been some improvements.
I'm not too sure the majority of people.
Well, a lot of people
that will vote on the 23rd will have any notion what TTIP is or will care.
TTIP is a major trade deal with the United States, and a lot of people, particularly one trade union have voted against Europe on the basis of this. But we're not, as you say, voting on TTIP. And the fact is that kind of trade deal, I would much prefer it's negotiated by governments across Europe, all of whom have to face their electorate in the next couple of years, than negotiated exclusively by Boris Johnson and Farage and people who, you know, in the same people who are now saying, oh, we'll protect you, the little person, against the foreigners coming to take your job. If those people have any interest in protecting low-paid workers, they could legislate on zero-hour contracts. They could introduce a proper living wage. There are very many things that they could do to protect the lowest paid, but they don't bother because they're selling themselves as the champion of the ordinary person, and they are not. These are the elites.
Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the Labour Party, sister party of the SDLP, said yesterday that the EU needs to change dramatically and become more democratic. Do you agree with him?
I think every project, like I say, there is no show me a democratic government that is perfect. Show me a parliamentary system that is perfect. No, but
kind of wriggles out. He didn't say needs to change, like anything in life needs to change. He said dramatically. So dramatically
Claire. Yes, okay,
so
fair enough.
So do you think the EU needs to change dramatically?
I think it needs to change substantially. For example, it's
substantially wrong at the minute, is it?
Stephen, if you tell me some of the things that he outlined, I will tell you whether or not I agree with him. I think
Why do you think it needs to change?
What substantially
needs to change? And we have 60 seconds.
Well, for example, I think there could be more power to the Parliament. In the same way, there could be more power to the House here in Stormont, in the Assembly. There could be more power to Westminster. But I tell you, I think in general, the common endeavour and working together with our neighbours has been very good for this place. And those things will stop. I mean, if it needs to, it's us, it's we need to change. We need to start seeing Europe for the value that it is. We need to start seeing the value that it adds to our agri-food sector. I'm going to try and talk you out here, but we need to see that in a big, uncertain world, we can't go into our shell and pretend that all the problems stop at the border and we can solve. I think it's really close because people say stuff to me like, if it doesn't work out, we can always go back in. We can't. This is a major, major once in a generation decision. And people are voting on all sorts of different things, but vote on
the facts. Are you nervous?
Yeah, I am nervous. I am nervous. It's really important. I still think it's winnable. I think they'll still think sense will win out. I think Remain is ahead. But I think everybody who sees the value of European cooperation and internationalism and doesn't want Boris Johnson in charge on Friday should come out and vote.
If you think you're ahead, why are you nervous?
Because I don't take anything for granted, because I am a Democrat, because I don't think that any election is a foregone conclusion. I think people could say it is very complicated. I'm not going to bother going to the polling station. But if people have questions, ask someone, address them, you know, Google it. but come out to make your voice heard on this. It's vitally important.
Thanks for coming in, Claire.